Welcome to Grit with Wisdom. This is the podcast that delves deep into the inner psyche of mountain bikers from all aspects of our sport in order to discover the tools and the tactics that can help us have more fun out on the trails more often. Our aim here is to help you understand what it takes to push our own personal boundaries in the sport we love from a mental and emotional perspective.
Welcome to the main podcast of the day.
Fantastic. That's my new podcast intro. I'm going to need to re-record one. I love it. Okay, so adding to that, today on the show we have North Vancouver free ride legend, among many other things, Jeff Gulovich.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Man, I'm stoked to have you here. So Jeff's longtime career as a professional mountain biker has been filled with loads of impressive highlights, remarkable comebacks from injuries, and a continued dedication to sharing his passion and expertise with others. Most notably, for those that don't know Jeff already, Jeff has solidified himself among mountain bike stardom with appearances in legendary bike films such as New World Disorder, Cranked, Follow Me, and many more, as well as competing in the Red Bull Rampage and the Crankwork Slopestyle events. So as you'll hear when we get chatting, Jeff's ability to concentrate his focus onto the task at hand is unmatched. Truly amazes me, and you'll get a sense that he's someone that's been kind of refining his ability to make decisions and think critically under pressure over a lifetime now. So whether it be riding in the Red Bull Rampage, riding lines blind, or saving himself, getting himself back to safety in the face of a near-death accident, which we'll talk about in a second, this guy knows his way around mindset. So super stoked to sit down here today after a great ride on Mount Seymour. We just rode your first lap back on John Deere, right?
Dude, it was incredible. Like, I told myself, take it easy, just chill. And then as soon as we dropped in, I was just like, things are feeling good. Let's go. And it definitely superseded my expectations for the riding portion of today.
Oh man, it was so cool to see you smiling from ear to ear. Like,
still there.
So good. So we're going to get into all sorts of things here on the show today, talking about, you know, the mental side of your mountain biking, free riding, competing, and then most recently, your injury that you had back there in March. So yeah, with no further ado, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
Maybe we can start off here. What did I miss in that intro?
I don't know. There's been a lot of movies and magazines and covers over the years. Competed around the world, shoots around the world. I don't know. You pretty well covered like all the big ones there, but it's been a heck of a journey over the past 20 years.
Oh man, such an amazing career you've had so far, and I feel like you're kind of still so within the journey. There's so much good stuff to come for you, especially, yeah, on the back of this latest injury. So
definitely.
I'm stoked. I think a good place to start, I've heard you kind of say before on another podcast that you have to have a lot of grit to persevere as a professional mountain biker. This podcast is called Grit with Wisdom. So I want to know, what does the word grit mean to you?
There's many different forms of grit, but in my opinion, what I was referring to is just, you need to have that drive, you need to have that dedication, you need to be able to block out negativity. And then in addition to, like, once you get to that level, there's always going to be like naysayers on the internet, mm, things like that. And it's just things that you need to be able to block out, just disregard. And even when you might hear things from your loved ones, they need to be able to just say, maybe I didn't hear you. Mm. Maybe that didn't happen. But it's, no matter what sport you're doing, no matter what profession you're chasing, nothing gets handed to you. You need to pull your weight and take what you can get. And like, when I say take what you can get, I mean like you need to put your foot on the gas and go, because nothing's going to get given to you. Mm. And there's 100 other people, there's 1,000,000 other people in line to take that position. So no matter what you're doing, if you're playing an instrument, if you're going to school, if you're working behind a desk, like, there's different styles of grit, but like, you need to put on your big boy pants and give it all you got.
Totally. Such like words of wisdom there. I couldn't agree more about it. It's like, yeah, as much as we want to say like, you know, focus on the positives and this and that, there comes a time when it's like, you've got to do the work.
Yeah. You need to step up.
Yeah. And that's a big part of what I try and focus on. I think so much of the mental stuff is out here in the abstract. We can talk about it all day long. It makes sense. We're all like, yeah, totally. I see that, but it's like, what are the actual tools? What can we actually take action on? So yeah, maybe that leads into another question I wanted to ask here. Like, what are some of your mental processes? Maybe to make it a little more specific, you're looking at a new line. It's maybe something that you're like, okay, this is serious here. I need to focus. I need to get into the zone in order to ride this thing. Break that down to me. What does your step-by-step look like?
That's kind of the point, is like getting into the zone, because you're not going to be feeling it every day. And some people have a great way, like almost a light switch personality, where they can flip into the mode and be there. But some other people, it takes a little more time. You got to convince yourself or look at the future, reassure yourself. But the biggest thing I can tell people is, if you're not feeling it, don't do it. It's not going anywhere. Come back another day when you're feeling solid and pumped up. And you have plenty of time. Like, take your time with it, do your homework, look at it, weigh the positives and negatives, look at the, you need to know what the bad results could be in your head. Like, you need to know, if I land here, if I go deep, if I come up short, what could happen? You need to go through that process. Those that completely block that out, that's a band-aid fix, and it might cost you in the long run. So do your due diligence. Look at your run in, look at your run out, look at the actual feature, be it a structure or a natural rock, whatever you have in your path. And maybe go practice something similar size or similar, a move that has similar ingredients, and come back when you're feeling solid and you think you have it locked down. Like, we've all done the ready, fire, aim thing before, and most of the time it works out. But every now and then it might not. Like, you might not see a weird cross route in your run out, or like a hole or a compression somewhere, and like, you need to be aware of what you're doing. So,
totally. So you're talking about ready, fire, aim, as in like just ride the trail.
Yeah, you
really
quickly
look at it and go.
Totally.
Yeah.
And like, more often than not, like, yeah, it should work out if you have the correct skill set and you've done things like this before. But in the big picture, do your homework. There's nothing wrong with it. Check your bike, make sure everything's locked in, and then send away.
Yeah, I really like what you're saying there about the band-aid fixes, because I think as mountain bikers, it's so tempting to go towards those.
Totally.
I know so many people I work with, and myself even, will be like, I just can't look at things for too long, I've just got to go.
Yeah.
But if we go too far in that direction, it becomes what you're talking about there. We're not doing our due diligence. We're
exactly.
not looking at some of the potential consequences and giving the feature or the trail the time it deserves.
Yeah, and like, we're all just having fun, right? You gotta keep that in the back of your mind. If you're not feeling that day and you go home and beat yourself up, like, you're wasting your breath. Just like, go home and be stoked you're healthy, think about it and come back another time.
Yeah, we're chatting about this on our ride, hey? Like, mountain biking's meant to be fun.
Exactly.
We're out here and we're not having a good time. It's like,
what are you doing?
Something else for a bit.
Yeah, go swimming.
Exactly. Go play golf.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So talking about the focus there, you kind of talked about two different types of people. Some people that kind of flick a switch and go into their state of focus. Some people that maybe need to think about it a little bit more, or have all the rocks stacked the right way. Which one would you say you are most of the time?
I think it changes with age, experience, and maturity. And when I was younger, there's definitely a lot of ready, fire, aim kind of mentality. And your bones bent. You bounced when you hit the ground back then. But like, after having 20 years worth of injuries, and I wouldn't say any regret, but you look back on your errors. Like, I, for one, remember my mistakes more than my highlights. And you got to go, it's just in the back of your head, you need to go and do this move again or get redemption. And it's a funny thing, because like, successes are what you expect, failures are your end result. And if you can right wrongs or be able to knock off those mistakes one by one in your head, then you more or less have a clean slate.
Right.
And over the years, like, I think I did my kneecap when I was 18 years old, and I almost ruined my career at that point. And it's just like, you need to build yourself back up, build up that confidence again, and play it smart. But like, from, I'd say, 12 years old to 18, it's just like, I'll do that. And you just go do it.
Yeah.
And it was nothing. And then, like, I'd say most of my serious injuries up until the last one were little mistakes.
I see.
It's just like, you give yourself an inch, and whatever that crash is, we'll take a mile.
Yeah, totally. So how do you you know, you're saying we remember our mistakes more than we remember our successes. I can totally relate there. And I think it's almost human nature to focus on like what could hurt us.
Totally.
More often than focusing on like how well we rode John Deere today or, you know, all of the good rides and good moves we do in between that.
Totally.
How do you acknowledge some of those potential consequences or past things that you don't want to repeat, but then get your mind back to the present and be like, this is what I need to do now to not have that happen a second time?
Yeah, I'd say the quickest route to overcoming things like that is head on.
Mm.
Like once you get your ability back, or once you, if you've walked away from a feature or anything like that, and it's in the back of your head, because that's where it's going to stay.
Mm.
It's like, you just need to go face it head on.
Right.
And like some moves just might not be for you. Like you might not be able to kick that one, and it's just like, screw it, walk away.
Mm.
But if you can overcome little things, like even see someone else do it, or you might not have a guinea pig in front of you, it goes back to doing your homework and looking into the feature and overcoming little things step by step.
Yeah, so when you're talking about going back and facing it head on, you're not necessarily going straight back to that feature.
Yeah.
But second week back of riding, but you're putting building blocks in place to put you towards that.
Yeah, you need to build a foundation for success, because like you are going to fall off the horse every now and then. And if you don't have those building blocks in place, you go back to square one.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a great one. And tell me, do you ever experience like emotions like fear, doubt, hesitation?
Yeah.
When you're out there on the trails.
Yeah, and I think those also come more with age too, because you've had these experiences. When you're young and fearless and you only know success, you got nothing to lose.
Mm.
And once you've built a career, a job, a lifestyle, you have things to lose, and then it becomes self-preservation. And like you need to be able to find a clear path between complete, what's the word I'm looking for? You need to find a way to not play full on defense, but not play full on offense.
I see what you're saying. Yes, and to take risks, but don't take all the risk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like I used to guinea pig a ton of features on the slope tour growing up.
Yep.
And it's just like, what could go wrong? Like, obviously I know what I'm doing, blah, blah, blah. And then you get a little bit further along in your career and you got some new kids full of testosterone and youth on their side.
Yeah.
And it's just like, maybe I'll let them guinea pig it. Oh, you landed flat? Yeah, I'm not going to go that fast.
<There you go.
laughs> But in the beginning, it's just like, I was guinea pigging stuff with like Alex Pro, Zinc, Straight, Seminoc, and like the list goes on.
Yeah.
And then like you began to notice the older boys like sitting back a little and watching all the young guys. And you're like, I know what you're doing. Like,
so
I get it.
Yeah.
Like, it totally makes sense now.
Yep. You don't see it when you're the young guy, hey? Do you find it kind of played into your personality too? You're like, yeah, I'm that guy that always guinea pigs things. Like, I can do this.
Yeah, it totally does. Yeah. Like, everybody, there's always a couple guys that people are like, he'll do it first.
Yeah.
And like, you fall into that category.
You kind of want to live up to that too. They're like,
totally.
You know, they all believe in me, so I better believe in myself.
It's power to you as well. Like, if you have that sort of confidence so you can go into it, then that's amazing. Like, I still look at big features now and you're like, yeah, no problem.
Mm.
Like, you might just go hit it right off the bat. But it's just like, if you have a doubt in your mind, address it. And there's no problem with like taking an extra minute to think about it.
Totally.
Yeah.
And as you're taking that extra minute to look at a feature, do you find you kind of like walking about, looking at it from the top, the bottom, or are you just kind of like staying in one place?
No, I'll walk around.
Yeah,
you want to check your run out. You want to know how much like braking time you have.
Totally.
If there's any variables in there. You run into, like, are you set? Are you turning before the move?
Mm.
Blah, where can I get my speed from? And then, like I've always just wanted to do things smoothly. And if it is like a crap landing and it's going to look nasty, it's like sometimes it's like, what's the point?
Yeah, exactly.
So do your homework.
Totally. Yeah. Sometimes it's like, if the feature's not going to feel good, like you
for
said,
sure.
What's the point?
Exactly. Like,
I'm sure it's cool doing techie gnarly moves, but sometimes it's just like, that's just going to be crap.
Yeah. If you're landing and your head's kissing your top tube.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
It's not much fun for anyone.
Don't do that. Yeah. No. You're going to have to go to your chiropractor.
Exactly, yeah.
And yes, we do go see chiropractors at 36.
Absolutely, even at 29. That's awesome, man. I wanted to talk here a little bit about some of the freeriding you've done in the past and kind of your mental process around that. Something that really fascinated me is you're talking about obviously spending lots of time in the air. you're talking about like really consciously thinking and making decisions and doing all this stuff in the air. I've never spent too much time in the air, so I'd love to know, like, what does your process look like? In fact, you know, the thought of it kind of terrifies me, being in the air for more than a few seconds, because I'm like, oh, what will I do?
For sure. Yeah. And that's totally normal as well. But I think every feature is different, and you need to be very aware of that. Like, you might have hit something similar, but it's not going to be the same. And you just need to take your past experience and be able to apply it to a situation, because, like, the lip's probably going to be a different angle, different height, different speed to make it to the landing, and you just need to like actually apply your experience. It's like going to the school of sending.
There we go.
Do your homework. But yeah, it's definitely interesting, because like some of the big drops at Rampage and things like that, that's all you can rely on is your past experience. Like, you need to be able to figure out how much speed you're taking, where you want to land, and then you need to be able to create a pocket for your landing zone and be able to land within it. Like, I always try for like Rampage, I'd say like an 8-foot pocket is pretty realistic for your landing zone. And if you can't hit that, then like you need to go back and do your math again.
Totally.
But
it's pretty small in the scheme of things, isn't it? Like, when you're
doing 2 bike lengths.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, so to be able to be like that accurate when you're landing is huge.
But it comes into play like more than you think. And like in the desert, when you're sending like Kamloops or down in Utah, it's different because there's no trees in the terrain. Mm. And like, they might be dangerous, yes, in the forest where we live, where it's like very slippery and everything, but it also creates stability in the dirt.
Totally.
And then you go to the desert and you don't have that scale anymore. Everything looks so much bigger, and it might be, but like in the forest, everything feels bigger because there's more consequences.
Totally, yeah.
You're like, look at that cedar, look at that fir, look at all these trees.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I've never thought of like that adjustment you must have to make going from, growing up here, riding on the North Shore to all of a sudden free riding in the desert.
It's so much different.
Yeah.
And like, even just riding the terrain, like it's so much more loose on the dirt and everything. You're surfing and you're controlling drifts. Whereas here it's just like, that's my turn point and I know I'm going to tack.
Totally.
Or it's too dusty and you're like, I know I'm going to drift 2 feet, so that's my window that I'm going to ride through. Right. And there's all these little factors you need to take into account. Like, mountain biking is literally just problem solving on the fly.
Yeah, I love what you're saying there too. Like, I guess my question kind of goes back to, how do you deal with the unknown of being in the air for a little bit longer? And you're talking about all these things that you actually do before you get into the air.
Yeah.
To help you understand a little bit more like what it's going to feel like and what you're going to do, where you're going to land.
For sure.
All of those things.
And then with the experience comes efficiency. Like, you figure out these things sooner than later. Mm. Whereas like, if you're unfamiliar with the terrain or what you're about to do, then obviously you're slowing down the process and you're going a little more in depth. But efficiency comes with practice.
Totally.
Yeah.
So what would your advice be to someone that's maybe riding Whistler Bike Park? They're running A-line, but they're feeling like they're getting that dead sailor effect that we hear of so often. They're kind of getting into the air stiffening enough.
Dead sailor's okay, unless you're, well, you know what? Like, if you're just flying straight and you're holding on and you're in a relaxed position, or maybe in like a little bit of stun, like, it's okay. Like, bike park gives you the ability to just ride the trail. Because like, riding bike park and riding actual bike trails, they're two different worlds.
Totally.
Like, the Whistler Bike Park, Sun Peaks, like all those places are incredibly built. Like, their trail crews are insane and they're very talented riders themselves. Like, they test everything. Mm. They know exactly what they're doing. And the trails there are built for a set speed. They're built to more or less be able to cruise through without touching your brakes. And that's just it. Anybody can drop in. Don't touch your brakes? Okay. And if you have the confidence, like, you'll be fine.
Totally.
But then you come to like actual trails where it's built by whomever, and that's where you need to have the knowledge of your bike and your skills polished up, because you're riding a blind trail and you need to be able to make these decisions on the fly. Totally. Where bike park, it's just like, it's more or less set it and forget it.
Yep. Yeah, I think the key there, like you said, like, as long as you stay relaxed in the air, you're going to manage, you know, the pressures that are putting you into the air.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, I know in my experience, sometimes when I don't stay relaxed enough, I'll kind of stiffen up, and that's when I get into trouble. It's when the bike starts sending me in directions I potentially don't want to go.
Well, and then, like, bike setup, too. Like, people might be unfamiliar with how to set up your bike for bike park or actual trails and jumps.
And it's different between the two, right?
Absolutely. Mm. And, like, a lot of people might have their rebound pumped up because they think it allows them to bunny hop a little better. Then you hit a big center, and you suddenly you're ass over a tea kettle.
Totally.
Midair.
And you're like, you're in a world of hurt.
Might be night night Jimmy Kite when I touch down here.
Yeah, exactly.
So shouldn't be laughing at that, but it is definitely something reality, to take into consideration.
It? Yeah, and I think we're laughing because we probably both had that experience
for
ourselves.
For sure. You landed so far on your front wheel that you can see where your corpse is going to land and somehow save it.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my God.
Exactly. It can be part of the journey, but it's definitely something that's nice to avoid on that journey if we can as much as possible.
Like, and to go in addition to that, like, you need to become a good mountain biker, you need to become a good crasher too. So you're going to crash.
Dude, this is one of my next questions. Let's keep diving in here. Okay.
Fire away.
This is it. Like, you said, like, to become a good mountain biker, you're going to need to crash. So I guess my question was like, well, okay, I'm starting out mountain biking. How do I crash?
Yeah. Well, Simmons actually told me when, and he being like one of the greats, like growing up, he was a BMX racer. And I think his BMX team had to take, it was either jiu-jitsu or taekwondo.
Okay.
I don't know the difference between the two. You got Jeff Gulovich here, not Bruce Lee.
Fuck that one. Wrong
guy. Son of a... But whichever one it was, it's based around using your body weight or to your advantage, or say like your opponent's body weight against them, and learning how to fall and everything, like tucking your shoulders and being able to use that falling momentum to pick yourself back up even quicker when you're rolling out, and little things like that. Like, most of the time, if you can land on your feet, that's great, but like trying to say run out of a crash, there's so many more factors. Like, are you going to step in a hole and twist your knee? Are you going to hurt your ankle? Are you going to break your ankle if you try to like stick it? So generally my rule of thumb was, sure, touch your feet down first if you can, but lead into a roll and just like take that momentum and use it to almost cushion your
like
fall.
Like self-arrest almost. Yeah.
Like you don't want to stop on the spot, obviously, but like using that momentum and putting it into your body rolling as opposed to a direct impact,
right,
it definitely cushions the blow. And that's something I learned naturally, but then years later hearing Simmons say that, I was like, it makes so much sense.
It's really interesting because quite often when I ask people like a similar question, like everyone's like, yeah, of course, mountain bikers, they need to learn how to crash.
I'm like,
how do you do that? Well, I don't know, you have to crash to figure it out. It's like, so it's cool to actually have an answer like that. I like where you're going, kind of like, okay, we've got gravity, that's a natural law. There's always going to be gravity pulling us to the ground.
Oh, yeah.
How do we use that in our favor?
Yeah.
To get ourselves to the ground to stop, but stop in a way that's going to maybe minimize the impact.
Yeah, like it's going to be in your head to like put your arms out first. But like, sometimes that's not the call.
Yeah.
Like if you're putting your arms out into a rock bed, like you're probably going to break some fingers, hand, wrist.
Yeah.
But if you can turn your body into a rolling motion, it's definitely much more beneficial.
Totally.
But you might not have that air awareness or thought process.
That's what I was going to say. Do you find yourself calm enough in that situation where you've made a mistake? You're like, right, I'm in the air off my bike. I'm about to have a crash. Are you consciously thinking about like what you're doing with your arms and where you land in?
More or less, yeah. Like it's become a natural sort of movement now to like protect your body.
Totally.
And like if I'm going down, the first thing I do is arms up and protect my head. And that's your most important tool, so.
Fantastic.
Anything else can get dinged up, you'll probably come back from the injury.
Yeah, totally.
Like it's honestly, the end result is limitless. Like anything can happen. But at least if you have some sort of base knowledge of rolling or self-preservation, then definitely gives you an advantage to not injuring yourself.
Totally, yeah, that self-awareness and kind of agility.
Yeah.
Is a definite bonus. And like where in a mountain biker's career do you think is a good time for them to start thinking about crashing? Is it like right at the start?
Immediately, I'd say so. Like anybody you know that came from a gymnast background, they're pretty darn good at rolling out.
Totally.
Or their legs are so strong, they can usually just run out.
Yeah.
But not everybody has that capability. Like I've even come down off, when I was learning tail whips, like you throw your bike away and you're coming down the landing and you just stick it and run out. And you're like, that was such a dumb idea. Like, why didn't I just like touch down and roll down the landing?
Oh, I see.
Like, sure, you would have gotten dirty, but in that moment, you're like, I got this.
Such an interesting one.
Anything can happen.
Yeah.
And try and eliminate that factor.
Totally, yeah. I think it speaks to your years of experience, isn't it? Like, you've probably crashed in, like, 1,000 or a million different ways.
Yeah, 10,000 hours of it.
So now, like, next time you're in there, hopefully that's not anytime soon, but you've got like these, all these different skill sets and ways of managing that crash to try and minimize the risk depending on the situation and where you are.
Yeah, and like the best you can do is the best you can do. So
it's super interesting. Like, I know for me, I stopped crashing a lot when I first got lessons.
Yeah.
So now I'm kind of the attitude that, like, oh, I wish I had have got lessons earlier, and then maybe when I got to like more of an intermediate advanced stage, that would be a time to start learning how to crash because I was taking more risks.
Right.
But I guess for you, you were probably in that advanced stage for longer than you can remember now. You know, you were in the Craig movies back when you were, what, like 13 or something?
Yeah, so. I think it started at 13.
Yeah.
I did a lot of crashing up to that point.
Totally, yeah. So you would have went through that before you could even remember, I'm sure.
For sure. And, like, obviously, if you're younger and getting into the sport, like, that's a huge advantage because you are a little more nimble. You have way less body mass, which takes away from your impact as well.
Yeah. And we're talking about that too, like, as adults with more responsibilities, things to think about. Even as a pro mountain biker, you've got so much stuff to think about and, you know, so much to lose.
I had a stacked calendar this year. Like, I was supposed to go to New Zealand, I think, 10 days after my incident to judge the crankworks there. And I was like, guys, like, I almost just died. So I think I'm going to pass on this one. And they're like, yeah, that's a good idea. I'm in a hospital bed right now.
Man, yeah, so lucky to have such good sponsors there backing you and employers and all of those things.
Honestly, like, everybody's been so great. Like, I just signed with Nirona at the beginning of this year. Thank you. And like, having to call them, like, I was so concerned. And my team manager, Julie, was just like, we're an alpine company. Like, people get taken in avalanches, just heal up. And I was just like, you're a legend.
It, like, kind of makes sense, right? It's like, oh, yeah, totally. It does. Yeah, it comes with the nature of it.
Yeah, if you're pushing it, like,
the industry. Yeah.
Yeah. And if Mother Nature wants you dead, it'll do it.
Totally. Yeah, so for those that haven't heard already, do you mind just telling us a little bit about your latest incident? What happened back in March and kind of where are you now?
For sure. Well, March 2nd, I think that's 4 months ago now. We were doing some backcountry skiing off of Cypress, which is in West Vancouver. And we had all our Avi gear with us. It was an amazing day, like 45 centimeters of fresh snow. And we dropped down the back boundary into an area called Christmas Gully. We'd already been down a couple times. Like, everything felt good. We did our homework. Snow seemed stable. It was like a -8 day. And we knew the temp spike was coming in the next few days. So we're like, let's go crush it. Let's have a couple good last days, and that's our season. And two runs down. Third run, we dropped down the first tier of the back of Cypress, and it was incredible. Like, just blower pow, having such a time. And then we dropped down the second tier, which goes through a tree line and then out to the flats, and then you're basically done. And about halfway down that second tier, you go through a tree line, and I figured I'd get eyes on last man. But they had trended through my blind spot and gone left around this little island. And when I stopped, I looked up, didn't see them. And I felt like the snow that I had pushed a bit had propagated like a little bit of a, I'd say a sluffalanch.
Yeah.
But I felt it push my skis. I'm still scanning the terrain for my buddy. And then before I know it, fully swept me. I'm on my side. I've been pushed into about a 45 degree slope now. And it's like a full gully, like full terrain trap. I'm going down, and there's a tree soft left of the deepest point. And I'm like, holy shit, I'm going to hit that. And I'm trying to kick my skis off frantically. I even got my hand on a branch, and the snow just pulled me out.
Holy shit.
I'm going down, can't get my skis. So I oriented my body so my upper body wouldn't strike the tree. I smash it, and I feel the snow roll over me. And I'm about just over waist deep buried. More or less sitting on like a 3/4 angle, and I get up. I'm trying to yell for my group. I have no clue if there's any damage. I just know that I'm sitting up against a tree. My legs are right there. So I start digging myself out immediately. I'm like, this is nuts. And my leg's not there. And like, adrenaline's pumping.
So you're digging down to where your leg should be.
Yeah.
It's not there.
It's not there. And so I keep digging out. I see my pants are bent left. And my leg, I shit you not, at this point, I've exploded this part of my femur, and my leg is completely sideways across the left side of my body,
oh my
and
God.
Like up the hill. And I'm like, holy shit, this is happening. Like, this is fucked. I try yelling for the group a little more. I'm not getting anything. And so I pick my leg up and I put it back to where it should be, and there's zero resistance.
You just, yeah, just pick it up and move it like a floppy.
And then I finished digging out my left leg and the ski's still on, so I just punched it off, left it there, and I was like, I need to make contact with my group before the pain kicks in. Like, I need to make decisions. Like,
right, so you haven't felt any pain?
I haven't felt
any
pain.
Are you starting to panic?
Or my heart's racing.
Straight into, like, task?
I felt pretty calm overall doing my assessment. Like, I went down my pants to see if my femoral artery was leaking or pooling, and it didn't seem to be doing either. And I was just like, I need to take advantage of this adrenaline rush right now. And so I oriented my body so my back was facing down the hill, move my legs so it was up. I couldn't go forward because it was going to catch and go wherever it was going to go.
Yeah.
And I passed myself down between like three trees, and now I'm through the tree
so
line.
You're going head first.
Yeah.
On your back.
And I'm just like using branches to pass me along.
God,
and it's just open slope for like another 180, 200 feet. And I was like, I got to get down. And so I literally like put my goggles back on. I'm holding this tree and I'm just like, and I just tossed myself backwards and I start rolling down. And I kid you not, my leg kicked my helmet. I have a dent.
It's just flopping around.
It's just flopping.
And it dented your helmet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
And I roll out, and there's like a little 2-3 foot drop at the arm, and I fall out into the all the Abbey slough. And I can finally see my crew. And I was just, and they're like, did you forget something? They totally forgot, like, thought that I just double ejected down that last pitch, and I was just like, I need a helicopter, my femur's broken. And they're like, what? I'm like, this is real world, I need a helicopter. And my buddy Steve like immediately pulled up his phone, and he's relaying like another 50 meters behind him to our buddy that tried to like get the whole flats out to like where we exit.
Right.
And they're relaying back and forth. Meanwhile, I get on my stomach and I army drag myself out of the Abbey slough in case anything else releases.
Yeah.
And when I feel like I'm far enough away, I roll myself over, made a snow bench, put my leg on it, and just packed it in snow to help prevent any more swelling. And it takes Steve about 30, 35 minutes to get to me. And he had, like, threw his skins on and walked back up. And it took Graham, our buddy, about 1:15 to get to me because he was just, like, boot packing through it.
Yeah.
And, Graham dug in behind me to, like, try and keep me warm. Steve threw his jacket on me. And then Marcus was just skiing back there by himself. He just sees us at the bottom. He's like, hey, guys, like, what's going on? And like, we tell him the stitch. He's like, oh, shit, okay. It's like, they all give me layers and trying to keep the mood light. And they're checking in, like, how you doing? And I'm like, I'm fine. Yeah. And, like, I'm just trying to keep the group chill as well, because, like, there's nothing we can do. It's either we get ourselves out of there, but we know we have the heli on the way. And, yeah, it took about 3 hours for the heli to get in because there was cloud coverage that was low. And, first guy off the line was actually someone I had assisted with an extraction about 6 months earlier on Cyprus again.
It's a crazy
a bike crash. That's right. He's like, what's up, man? You look familiar. I'm like, yeah, like, we met in October. And he's just like, oh, no way. How you been? I'm like, good until now.
The casual catch up in the mountains.
Wow. And it's like, what's going on? I'm like, femur's definitely broken. No head trauma, no back trauma. Feeling good everywhere else. I can still move my toes. Heart rate's good. Let's get out of here before those clouds come in. He's just like, sounds good to me. Here, breathe on this. And gives me a green whistle.
Wow.
And yeah. Then the other doctor that was on the line, I think she gave me fentanyl, she said.
Okay.
And I was just zonked. I was just like, nah. And they set up the bag, and I literally just lift myself into this backboard bag.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, we'll get your leg for you.
Thank you.
And then Susie
just flopped it out.
Yeah, man. As soon as they closed it, I fell asleep. I was like, now on drugs and like so tired from being in negative eight for 3 hours.
Some of the decisions you made too, like, it just amazes me, your ability to stay calm and stay focused.
Like,
you essentially handled this life or death situation by yourself for an hour and a half, right?
You got it.
And your buddies were able to get up there and keep you warm.
Like,
you you swung yourself down an avalanche path.
Like, I was weighing the options in my head.
Yeah.
And, like, I was under a low canopy on a 45-degree slope. Mm. It's like if someone came in from the top to try and help, they could have propagated something else. They couldn't get a heli in. They couldn't stage there. Like, there's no way it could have happened. They would have had to get me down, too. So
there's about seven decisions that you made while having a snapped femur that saved your life. It's amazing.
It was ridiculous.
So it's any wonder by the time you got into that that helicopter, you were ready to pass out.
Seriously.
Yeah.
And like even on the ground, like we had two bars of reception. They're like, do you want to call your wife? And I was just like, we're not out of here.
Mm.
We're not done yet.
No.
And I called her from inside the ambulance and I was just like, hey, don't think I'm going to be able to go to the groomsman meeting tonight to plan our buddy's stag. And she's like, what did you do? And I was just like, I fucked up. It's really bad. I'm going to the hospital. My femur's broken. Mm. I don't know what the deal is, but it's going to be a long one. And I ended up getting to the hospital, spending the night. They gave me all sorts of drugs, had a great time. But overall it was nuts, man. It was in literally 17 pieces. It was insane, man. Spent 6 days in the hospital. Surgery, got a big rod down through my femur. I got two blood transfusions. And it was nuts.
It's insane, man.
It was.
And tell me, if you don't mind answering, like, what was your thought process like there on the first couple of days? You've obviously had lots of injuries before. You're there in hospital. You're getting all this news that, like, your femur's in 17 pieces. Mm. This doesn't look good.
There's a lot going through my head, but immediately I was just like, I need to get healthy again. Like, what do I need to do? And I had some good chats with my surgeon. He's like, the good thing is you're healthy already. You're fit. We just need to get you moving as soon as possible. Like, it's going to suck.
Yeah.
It's really going to suck. But the bigger steps you take will lead to bigger rewards. Like, most people, they would wait till they can fully weight bear to begin to go to physio.
Okay.
And I started going to see my rehab therapist, Jay Inouye at Performance Lab Rehab. I think 10 days after incident, just to start working on inflammation and easy bending and doing as much as we could. And
so just moving the leg.
Yeah.
10 days in.
And it was wild. Like, the surgeon was just like, take a couple Advil before you go.
Yeah.
And push it.
What were the pain levels like then?
High.
Yeah.
High. Like, we mainly
for someone that's probably got a high pain tolerance, I can imagine that's through the roof.
It was rowdy, man. It was. Yeah, like, even now there's still some pain, but it'll work itself out. Like, the amount of mobility I have now is far exceeding what we expected it to be at this point.
Yeah.
I even have one of the inside pieces of the femur that from the impact and the way my leg twisted has bonded on completely backwards.
Right. Okay. So the bone's flipped around.
Yeah. So it's like almost a C, which would be part of, like, half of your femur that's just bonded on backwards.
There you go.
And the surgeon's like, totally fine.
Yeah.
Like, bone's bone.
It's so interesting, isn't it?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And
breaking my collarbone when it turned into a big lump, he was like, cool, you've got more bone there now. Yeah. It's going to be stronger.
It's, I was like, it's really? Nuts. Like, and all the things that they tell you, like, as soon as I could get back to weight bearing, they were telling me that impact helps bone mass grow. Huh. Like, you want to... Not say force, but unpleasantly suggest that you need more strength there. And your body reciprocates. It listens. It's been nuts, man. Like, the amount of people I've met through this process that have been so cool and just offering very helpful insight. Mm-hmm. Like, an amazing woman that used to be, I think she was a sports psychologist at UBC.
Okay.
She now works at level 10 where my physio is. I can't stop saying physio. He hates it when I call him physio. It's a rehab so therapist. More. But it is a lot quicker to say physio. So sorry, Jay. She's like, literally imagine bone growing. Mm-hmm. Like, before you go to bed, think about your leg healing. Yep. Think about all these little things. Like, picture bone growth. And it's just every little thing like that.
Isn't that interesting? I've heard this one before as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can more or less tell your body what to do.
Yeah.
If you really put the mindset into it. So it's all these helpful things.
It's so cool, Harry. And like just from day one, you went straight to like, what can I do?
Yeah.
Like not where am I? How much does this suck? What, I'm not going to New Zealand. All of these things that,
yeah.
that were potentially, were negative for you
totally.
In your life at that point. You just went straight to like, what can I do?
Yeah. Like you literally toss your next plans to the wind.
Yeah.
Like your job now is healing.
Yeah. And there's so much we can learn from that as mountain bikers. Like whenever anything bad happens, whether it's an injury or a setback, or we're not where we wanted to be, it's like, where am I now?
Totally.
What can I do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like even my wife, she's always been super terrified of me doing backcountry because of potential slides and things like that. And literally when I was tacked up against this tree right after impact, I went immediately to, you're not dying today. Like, this isn't how your story ends. Mm. Like, you need to get your ass moving. And you told your wife you weren't going to die doing anything stupid. So today's not your day. And I've told her this since. And she's just like, did you actually think that? I was just like, I shit you not. I was sitting there telling myself, you're not dying today. Do something about it.
It's amazing, isn't it? Sometimes we say these things that we, you know, don't even think are going to come back in the future. And then all of a sudden you're sitting there pinned up against a tree and you're like, nope, I said I'm not going to die doing anything stupid. I'm out of here.
Yeah. Sadly, I have to die in my early 80s from like high cholesterol or something.
Hey, dude, you just said no to that muffin at the cafe. I think you're good. You're healthy. Thanks for diving in there. I think, like you say, there's so many things we can learn from other people's experiences. I think for people listening and even for myself, I'm learning so much about your mindset there. And it's just fascinating to hear that you've been like sitting at home and part of your process was not only like the physical, moving the muscle around, doing all of those things, but also the mental as well. And
it's
picturing that bone growing. And now you're here. What do we say? It's been like 3 and a bit months.
Yeah.
And you're riding like a blue black mountain bike trail up in town.
John Deere. That
exactly.
Felt so good.
This is an injury that's meant to take 6 months to get back to like walking around.
Yeah. And like, obviously we're pushing it a little bit. Like I'm still in the no crash zone, but I feel comfortable at that speed.
Totally.
And it's been a hell of a journey.
Like, that's amazing. So how much would you say the mental stuff plays into it for you in like a recovery like this?
I'd say it's almost all of it. Like you need to set a goal. Mm. Like I celebrated every little milestone. It's just like the first day I could stand without crutches. Mm. First day I got permission to actually weight bear. Like I went to go see Jay. He's like, stand on one foot. And I was cheeky and I stood on my good leg. And he's like, no, you idiot. And it took me like probably 45 seconds to work up the courage to stand solely on my right leg.
It must be scary. Like not knowing it's going to support you.
Dude, or just... you've been told for 9 weeks. Or no, at this point it was 15 weeks.
Oh my God. Wow.
That you cannot weight bear. And you start going, I'm starting to see Jay and he's like, walk on it with your crutches. I'm like, you sure? He's just like, I know what I'm doing. I'm like, I know you know what you're doing. I'm just a pussy. Like, I get it. But like, after 15 weeks, getting the green light. And then, he literally hucked a medicine ball at me. He's like, stand on one foot. And I was just like, And I did it. He goes, there, you're healing. You're doing it. Like, how'd that feel? And I was just like, terrifying. He's just like, good.
Kind of like riding a skinny, isn't it? It's like, we could all ride on something that's 1 foot wide. But as soon as it's like up off the ground, we're like,
Exactly. And it's just like the support factor, like my wife too, like getting on the stationary bike as soon as I was allowed to, I couldn't get over the top. I was just kind of swinging at the bottom and she's like, go over the top. And I was just like, I can't. She's like, do it. And I was like, oh, and like, it was easier to go backwards because you had that momentum that you could just kind of fall into. And I have the clips of my first pedal strokes and it's like, I can barely keep the foot on the pedal. I was fully on the heel. Like my knee couldn't bend. So I was like kind of limping it around and I got over the top and it was just massive milestone.
Yeah. And even that, like going from I can't to her saying, do it. And then you're I can. That's been amazing.
Yeah. She's been an incredible support factor through all this. Like in the beginning, she's like, you didn't put the laundry away.
I'm like, I literally just finished putting the dishes away. It's been 3 hours. Like, I was literally with crutches, like passing dishes from the dishwasher, like almost one at a time. And I have to like take a break every like 4 or 5 items and sit down. It was insane.
How did you not get, maybe you did, but like, how do you deal with frustration in that process of like not being able to do the little things or it taking so long?
You got to accept it. You got to accept it and just keep working away at it. Yeah. Like, Bree even offered to get me like a little power scooter.
Okay.
So I can motor around, and I politely declined.
Oh man, those things are sick.
I know, but I wanted to keep my blood flowing. Like, if I wanted to go somewhere, I had to earn it.
You had to work for it. Yeah, and, that makes sense. Yeah. Your motivation to get up.
Exactly. And if you're crutching, like your blood's flowing. Mm. Like it's a lot of work to go uphill on crutches. Mm. And then when I started walking, like going downhill was so hard because it's all speed control and more impact. Like now going uphill is so much easier for me.
Yeah, that's it.
And just building the strength back. But in the beginning, I just said no to the scooter. Mm-hmm. And I was, my first goal, I think probably 3 days after leaving the hospital, was just making it to the end of the block and back.
Yep.
And that probably took me, it was probably 150 meters there and the same back, and probably took me 25 minutes.
Pretty hefty for like first week out of hospital.
Yeah, but like I was just like, I want to keep the blood flowing. So like, I need to keep moving.
Sounds so much to me like in your goal setting process, you're setting goals that challenge you.
Yeah.
But they're goals that you know you can achieve.
You can, like, hit
this
them.
Is going to be hard. This is going to suck.
Yeah.
But I can do it. It's not so hard that you're like,
yeah,
you know, collapsing halfway down the...
No. Yeah. It's something, you just need to set little things and just increase it as you can. Like my goal for the end of July is to do the grass grind.
Yeah.
And I used to do that in like 42 minutes, around my average. So I'm giving myself like a hour 15 kind of goal to do it for the first time. And yeah, we're gonna do it.
And I look at that and I'm like, oh, that's a hefty goal. But in your eyes, I can see that you're like, you're fired up, you're excited about this.
So you're
like,
doing
that's a good goal for you.
No, it's been incredible.
And just for reference, like today it's July 10th.
Mm-hmm.
You're walking Old Buck.
I've been walking up Old Buck.
Right,
that's
now,
about 4K hike.
Yeah, making it up to the bridge there.
Yeah.
At the Baden Powell. So to go from that, yeah, it's a fair step, isn't it? You're going
totally.
From that, it's a smooth path, a smooth 4K.
Yeah.
To go into the grass grind, for anyone who doesn't know, it's steps all
it's
the
steps.
Way up.
Well, actually, like later today, there's a big set of about 100 stairs behind Edgemont Village, and I'm just going to practice walking them.
Fantastic. So and that was kind of, yeah, my question was going to lead into like, how are you breaking down between where you are now and where you want to be at the end of the month?
Yeah, so that's kind of my goal. I've been going to physio twice a week. Been pedaling as much as I can. Like, my dad and I have been pedaling a ton. Like, I haven't ridden a bike with him since I was probably 7.
Really?
And like, yeah, he was never a big cyclist with when I was growing up, and so I got him an electric bike a couple of years ago after he had a heart attack, and now he's gotten himself fit again. And we've been like biking from my place to Ambleside and back like once a week.
Oh.
And it's just been really fun bonding.
So special,
It's been really cool. And like he's been an incredible support factor because obviously my wife works and my old man's retired now.
Mm.
So going to the pool, walking with the seniors.
Yep.
He's been taking me to physio for most of this. And it's been really fun reconnecting with him because like I generally travel for about 7 months a year. And yeah, I see them a ton. Like I drop in, I get a lot of the packages sent to their place because I'm out of town.
Mm.
But actually just hanging out and shooting the shit with the old man has been really fun.
Oh man, it's so great talking to you and just hearing about, you know, your focus on some of the positives that have come out of this like really terrible situation no one wants to find himself in.
You need to see the positives.
Yeah.
Like, because this, like, no matter who you are, this sucks.
Mm.
Recovering sucks. It's a lot of work. It's always going to be more, about 10 times more than you expect. And you just need to put the hammer down and go. Like, set little goals. Soon as you hit it, up the ante. You're like, you need to. You need to push yourself to the point where it sucks.
Mm.
Take care of your body, though. Like, rest properly. Eat properly. Do not drink. If you're a drug user, don't do that.
Yeah.
That's bad. But honestly, kick the toxins. take care of yourself.
Yep.
Because it everything you put into this, you're going to get out of it.
Totally.
And it's like anything. It's like literally learning to walk again is what I was doing.
Yeah.
And
the rest, right?
Yeah. You're taking baby steps.
Yep.
And keep your head down. You need to accept this. This is your existence right now. Mm-hmm. And if you want to get better, you got to put everything into it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yep. And I think it really speaks to your ability to get all the help you need, have all of those external support factors from your family to your physio, to your surgeon or people like this, but then also really putting in the work yourself as well.
Absolutely.
Not just saying, hey, I'm going to a physio once a week. That's enough.
It's yeah.
Like everything you possibly can in between.
A lot of people think that.
Yeah.
A lot of people think that if you just go and do exactly what your physio told you,
yeah. Or
you need to do that once a week, blah, blah, blah. But
it goes back to that band-aid, doesn't it? People want to just like pay some money and have the problem go away.
Totally. And that's just not how the world works. You got to be extremely self-motivated.
Yeah.
And even little things, like obviously some little things I was probably told not to do, but you got to try.
It was interesting. Yeah, I talked to you earlier. You were saying there's been times when Jay, your rehab specialist there, has had to say, hey, dude, that's too much right now.
Oh, yeah.
We want to tone it down a little bit.
Even what we did today, he will not be extremely happy with.
Well,
but
we can release this podcast in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah,
and then he'll be like, right on, dude, you're on track.
Yeah. No, he's such a beauty, though. Like, yeah. I was just shooting with Max up in Whistler Bike Park. And like, I was taking it easy. I was just cruising, keeping the wheels on the ground, getting to the points and shooting him. Mm. And Jay was just like, I am not okay with this. And I was just like, I promise you. I wasn't leaving the ground. I was taking it easy. And then immediately he was like, well, how'd it feel? And I was just like, it felt really good. Like I know my muscle tone isn't there. Like I was getting sucked into the back wheel in corners, feeling the G's.
Yeah.
He's just like, that's where you need to be careful. Like, oh, it's going to feel good when you're in a neutral position, just cruising. But those impacts, like your leg's not there yet, man. And I'm just like, I know.
So good to have a guy like that in your corner that's not yelling at you.
No.
But he's like, hey, dude, you want to be a little bit careful. Then. This
is why. He worked with professional Major League Baseball athletes for 2 decades. And it's like, those guys did everything they could to get to that point as well.
Mm.
And it's like, they're not babies. And you need someone that understands that and is still going to push you to get better. Like,
totally.
It's hard to explain.
The stern compassion.
Exactly. Like, yeah. And he's a guru in what he does. He has this amazing energy about him. He keeps you entertained. Like, honestly, like we text funny memes back and forth regularly. Like he's a good buddy too.
Totally.
And getting advice and guidance from him, like it's priceless.
So great, man. For those listening, Jay is going to be on the podcast later this summer, so I can't wait to dive into his mindset and kind of get his perspective.
He's an absolute beauty. Like, I admire that guy with everything I got, and I owe him a ton.
Yeah. Matt, thank you so much for diving into the rehab journey there as well. And something else I wanted to touch on is some of the other things you've been doing to keep yourself busy, to keep yourself motivated and stoked. I know that there's a few different things you've been doing, but one of them is golf. You've been doing a bit more golf.
I've been golfing.
Golfing a bit more than you had been. Tell us about that.
It's been great. I took up the game, I guess, season one of The Plague. And I just fell in love with it. Like, it's low impact. Chances of getting hurt are minimal.
Hmm.
And it's just great for your headspace, I find. Like, you're basically finding out your distance, selecting a tool to get this done, and then you have to execute it. And there's so many factors coming in. Like, obviously your drive is like, keep it between the trees, try and get it on the fairway. And once you find like your perfect swing speed, things like that, you can more or less do that consistently. And then when you're approaching the green, it's like figuring out if it's a front pin, back pin, is the grass short enough for the ball to roll on? All these factors. Like, do I give the ball backspin? Do I give it top spin? Like, there's so many crazy little things, and I just find it very similar to mountain biking in a very odd way, because at the same time, you're blocking out distractions, you're making line selections, and then you got to do it.
Mm.
And you got to stay composed the entire time. If you have bad swing thoughts, bad riding thoughts, like, it's going to affect either activity you're doing.
Totally.
Being able to control that, and then, like, obviously when you're playing with your buddies, like, they might try and distract you in your backswing.
Yeah.
But you go back to your competition days and like you don't hear a thing. And it's being able to control that.
Right. So you're going into a state where you're not hearing anything.
Yeah.
You're just focusing on the task.
It feels like you're in the start gate or like during a comp run. And it's very comparable in that sense.
Mm.
And it might not make sense for a lot of people, but I find it to be almost meditative for me.
Yep.
When I'm out there in nature, like picking my club, looking where I want to put the ball and then following through with it.
It makes sense. And I think that's my definition of the flow state when you're in the present.
Absolutely.
You almost feel like you're not thinking at all. You're just letting your body do what
you're
it knows,
doing.
And it's bliss.
Yeah.
Not and that I play golf myself, but that sounds blissful.
It's quite nice.
Yeah, I think it's such a cool way to learn, yeah, so many comparable skills for mountain biking. We have the risk.
Absolutely.
And there's so many different sports like that. I think it's great to have other focuses for the times in your life when you can't ride your mountain bike.
Yeah. Like, honestly, you can take that practice all the way down to, like, sewing.
Yeah.
It's just, like, if you want to make a beautiful piece of whatever you're making, you got to stay focused. You got to get your lines. You got to, like, think about what you're going to do.
And practice going in and out of those stages of focus because no one can stay focused for it.
Yeah.
Like, laser focus for a whole ride or a whole golf game or sewing a whole blanket.
That's it.
It's about, like, when are we lasering in and when are we giving our brain a bit of a rest?
Oh, I'm on the climbs, I'm just, like, you're chatting with your buddies, you're relaxing, and then you get to the trail. As soon as you drop in, you go to that state.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, in between shots, like, you're chatting with your buddy. As soon as you get to your ball, it's like, you're just zoned in.
Is there anything you'll do to and zone in? Or is that, like, an unconscious process that's just happening?
Mm-hmm. I'll usually take like a deep breath before I step up to my ball.
Yep.
And that's like kind of me just like jumping into it.
Yep. And is that similar on a mountain bike before you drop into something?
A little less so on a mountain bike.
Okay.
I feel so comfortable on the bike that like it's a bit of a different process. Like maybe before I'm doing like a big jump or something like that, I'll find that state. But more or less, I'm just happy on my bike.
Totally. Yeah. And you're in that state the whole time.
Love it. It's nice, but you definitely find it when you need it. And it's something that a lot of people might not be able to do. Like they might find pockets of doubt or disbelief you got to be able to fight through it.
Yeah. And how do you find it when you're playing golf with your buddies and maybe having a bit of a joke around whatever and you're like, shut up, I need to focus here.
I would never say that. I let them do their thing and I do mine.
So you just plan to block out all the externals.
You got to.
Yeah.
Especially when you're playing with like your good buddies.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They're going to try and screw you.
Oh, yeah. It can be difficult. That's why I ask.
Yeah. No, it's just you got to be able to play through it.
Even mountain biking, I get it all the time. Sometimes my buddy's like, come on, coach. Come on, show us how it's done. They're like,
you just got to be like, shut up.
Yeah, exactly. But you can't tell them that because they'll say something else.
Exactly.
So you just need to focus on what you can do.
You might as well
block
go
out
with
everything
it.
Else.
Yeah. Use that flow state to go with
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Roll with it. Exactly.
But if once they realize that they can't shake you, it's like, they kind of just stop.
Yes, exactly.
And they're like, damn it. And they'll pick on someone else. And then you join in.
Good times, hey? Oh. I wanted to ask you a little bit here about the present day work you're doing. I know that there's lots of interesting things you're doing, but one of them is working as a judge at competitions, stuff like Crankworx. So I want to ask you a little bit about that. Maybe you can just tell the listeners a little bit about what you're doing. We'll dive into some more questions from that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I've always been interested in like the judging portion of the slope styles and things like that. And Paul Rack was the head judge for years and still does a bunch of the competitions. And we had a good couple of talks about it. And then he kind of like took me under his wing and kind of mentored me into the position. And it kind of came from, I shouldn't say kind of, it came from wanting to help the sport. Like sometimes you'd wonder why people got which position and everything, including yourself. And I wanted to learn that process. Like, what do you guys look for? What are you doing? And when I retired from competition, it kind of motivated me to stay in the game. And you can actually somewhat coach the athletes as well. Like they'll come up and ask what would score better on this jump. And we'll just go through their run. And you can kind of give some feedback back and forth. So you can give the tools.
Well, it's really cool that you're open to doing that as a judge because it must help them so much, like knowing what's he looking for.
Yeah. Well, it's fun too. Like I wouldn't say you're actually mentoring these guys, but like you're giving good guidance. And I was in that position also at one point. Like I want to have a good relationship with the riders because then they're going to trust your opinion more as well.
Totally. That's fantastic.
I feel we have a great panel right now that has good communication with everybody riding in the events, and it just goes so much further.
It's come a long way, hasn't it?
Oh, man.
The judging of the sport.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's such a subjective thing, isn't it? I'm like,
it is.
Some people might really like spins. Some people might really like flips or big air. So it's like getting it a little more consistent across the board is so rad.
Totally. And like we're on course for every practice. Mm. We're talking to the riders. We're seeing what we can expect for their runs.
It's almost like getting a bit of a sense of like, what's it like out there, guys? How do the jumps feel for you
today?
How's
the course? How are you guys doing? How's the wind affecting you? How's the light affecting you?
Totally.
Like in Australia, the final runs, the sun's right in your eyes for the last three hits. And you're like, how's this affecting you? How are you guys doing? And they all hated it. Yeah. But like, show must go on.
What can you do?
Yeah, exactly. So... yeah, in that sense, I find it very fascinating. So,
that's awesome, man. And obviously, like, in the online world these days, we've got a bunch of people that are like, man, rad job, great work out there today.
Totally.
There's also probably just as many people writing comments like, oh, why'd you get an 80? It should have been a 90. How do you handle that, reading those comments?
I don't.
You don't?
I don't read them.
Yeah?
I haven't read comments on Pink Bike in probably 12 years.
It's the best way to do it.
Yeah. It's just like... people will rip on like a project you did. There's always going to be someone that has something negative to say. And it's just take their voice away.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you don't give them any power, they got nothing.
Totally, man. Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
If you're 12 years old behind a keyboard or let's say behind your cell phone.
Yeah.
And you're just talking smack. It's just like, why? Shut up.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, what's going on in your life that called you to take the time to sit down and write this negative comment?
Is this what makes you feel better? That's great. Keep on doing it. I will never see it.
That's a great attitude.
I will never read your comment. And yeah.
Have you had anybody in person at events kind of hit you up afterwards and be like, come on, so-and-so should have won instead?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just say, I disagree.
Yeah, fair enough.
What do you want?
Yeah.
Like when the riders come up, we have an actual conversation. Like we have our stenographs that have every trick they did, switch, regular, blah, blah, blah. How many bar spins?
Yep.
And we've only had friendly conversations with the riders. And like once you go into it, you can compare like the two riders around them through the stenograph. Like they did this, you did this, blah, blah, blah. Going through it, I got to stop saying blah, blah, blah.
That's okay.
You go through their runs and I would say every time, it's been a civil ending to the conversation. They're like, okay, I get it. Just like this guy bar spin the setup jump. You guys had the exact same run, but his style was better.
That's it.
And that's that. And yeah, more or less we've had zero problems with athletes. Yeah. Like there's one or two that have put up a tilly before. I'm not going to name names. But whatever, it is what it is. And
yeah, I think there's always going to be people like that. We look across the board, like you look at tennis or something, there's always someone throwing their racket, right?
Yeah.
It's just the way that some people deal with adversity.
For sure.
But that's really cool to hear your approach there. Like having a conversation is such a good way of, you know, kind of meeting in the middle and, you know, settling any disagreements that might have been there at the start.
Well, it's never really a disagreement. It's just a learning process.
Totally.
It's just like, why did you score it like this when I did that? And it might come down to so much as you cased.
Yeah.
And we saw. So that's that. Oh, yeah. We've had some people like dial runs. It's just like, no, you cased three hits and they're so in the zone, they didn't even notice.
Yeah.
Like they're like, you slip a foot and it's back on so quickly.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, you both slipped feet, but yours touched the ground. Theirs floated.
Yeah.
And like, we've had deciding factors like that too. And it's just like everything counts. 1 foot touched the ground, 2 feet touched the ground, everything. Is it full separation from the bike? Or do they stay on it and just like ride off track?
It's amazing, isn't it? Like riding's got to such a high level that it's now such little things that you're looking for. As a judge, you must be like, have to be so on it.
It's crazy.
You find it exhausting? Like
it is. You're done.
You're watching with such focus in order to see all these little things.
And then you're having conversations inside the booth too.
Oh, wow.
And then we have the head judge calling like regular oppo if it's too quick.
Yep.
And
that's amazing.
It is pretty cool.
Really, really interesting work you're doing. Some of the other work you're doing right now that we were just chatting about on our ride is with the Obrera team.
That's right.
Managing them. You started in January this year?
Started, I'd say late January. We'd been talking about it for a while, but I had the opportunity to take on managing the Orbea Ambassador Program. And so I'm dealing with athletes from Canada, UK, and US.
Awesome.
And it's been cool. It's been a neat learning curve, especially throughout this injury, to just more or less get a free education and been mentoring some of the young guns and just helping them with their social and their presence and kind of just their image.
Such a big part of being an athlete these days, or being anyone that's doing anything in life, really. What are some of the big pieces that you're trying to kind of get across to these guys and girls and help them with?
Just managing your content production. Like there's a couple that are really good about it. And there's some that are not so good at it.
Yeah.
So like, I've been...
And it must be a hard thing. Like they're obviously in the position they're in because they're really good mountain bikers.
Exactly.
So it doesn't necessarily mean they've got a background That's in media creation or web design or any of that stuff.
It's just practice. It's just knowledge and learning like anything. Totally. Like we kind of went through this whole process at the beginning of the Instagrams and Facebooks. Mm. And some of the young guns coming up, they've lived with it their entire lives.
Yep.
But still don't know how to use it.
Totally. Or like just use this tool in this new way, right?
Yeah.
It's very different to using it just as a personal Instagram account that's a bit of fun to show your family what you're up to, whatever.
Exactly.
And now all of a sudden you've got to present the brand in a certain way.
Yeah.
So it's like, how do they do that? How often do they?
That's well said, because everybody is a brand as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to be able to present yourself in a positive light. And depending on what you're doing, you're either pushing the limit in the free ride game, you're crushing it as a racer. And then a lot of the athletes see it, they're like, I'm a racer, I don't need to do social. And you're like, actually,
it's kind of, those days have passed.
It's hard of the game now.
Yeah.
And you just need to go with it, more or less.
Totally, yeah.
But I definitely say more than less.
More than less, yeah. It seems to be the trend for sure.
Yeah.
And what about just in terms of like being an athlete, are you doing any mentorship there? Helping them in those kinds of ways as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Getting out with Max last week, we had a creative fun video.
Yeah, that was a fantastic one for anyone who hasn't watched it.
It was just great getting out with him because he posts banger clips all the time.
Yeah.
But to actually get him speaking and talking about what he's doing is something that not many people have seen from him.
Oh, it was really cool. Yeah, as a viewer as well, getting that insight and being like, okay, what's Max thinking here? And he's talking about his line and what he's doing.
Yeah.
And talk about like the ability to go in and out of high intensity focus. Like
for sure.
Over and over there. And it's amazing.
Yeah. He's very impressive when it comes to his prep. Like he checks everything out and then literally he has that light switch where he can just go and he's in it.
Yeah.
And it's very cool to see. Like I didn't know him super well. We didn't get to chat too much during the Pink Bike Academy, but he's a great guy.
Oh yeah.
And a phenomenal rider. And very interested to see where his career is going to go.
Yeah, so super cool that you're able to, even while you're injured here, you know, work with those guys and get to get out there, make content, and potentially help them a little bit along the way.
Yeah, that was early. That was bike park. I think 8 days after I got the okay to walk.
Right.
But sure felt good.
Oh, no, that's a credit to you. That's fantastic. Hey, I'm going to respect your time here. This has been a fantastic chat.
Thanks so much.
What's up, guys? Just one more thing before you hit the trails. If you enjoyed this podcast, please be sure to subscribe and don't be a stranger. I'd love to hear from you about any topics or any particular episodes that you enjoyed, and even about any guests that you'd like to hear me have on the show in the future. You can find me on Instagram at the_mind_mountain. This podcast, mountain biking, and mindset are all things that are very close to my heart. So I feel super grateful to be able to share these conversations with you. So much love to you all for taking the time to listen. I'll see you next time.